Welcome to Android Developers Backstage, the podcast. I'm Chet Haas from the Developer Relations team.
And I'm Romain Guy from the Android Toolkit team.
And today we have two people. We have
two guests.
I'm Sandra. I'm from the Android Off team.
And I'm Carlos. I'm from the Android Off team as well.
Just to be clear, guests that are people, right? They're both today. It's pretty exciting. Auth, how do you spell that? What are we talking about today?
What does it stand for?
There we go.
So we do both like authentication, authorization, both for accounts and sometimes for like just people to phones, sometimes phones to other things. So
you said a lot of things there. Can you break the phones to other things?
So we've done, so features that we've done in the past include like smart lock for Android. So when you have that like that feature where you have like on-body detection and it keeps your phone unlocked while you're like walking around with your phone.
Is that also the feature where if I'm connected to a Bluetooth device, I can say, you know, stay unlocked? Okay.
Yeah. It's that. There's actually also a geofence, like trustlet that we call them.
Trustlet.
I know, yes.
Okay.
It's like plugged into the trust manager infrastructure in Android. So
okay.
So that's like one of the like many, like that would count as like an authentication feature, even though it's not related to accounts.
Okay.
Though we do the Google account stuff too.
Okay. So it doesn't go through accounts. It just uses some, how does that work then? So you have a Bluetooth device,
right.
You have a, you know, a watch or whatever that's going to talk to your phone. And how does it know to trust it?
So the user has to like basically the user denotes. It's sort of a user intensive feature where the user actually interacts with it. Like we see that the user has been pairing a number of times the Bluetooth device, and we'll say something like, "Oh, we see that you're pairing a lot with this thing. Do you want to keep your phone unlocked when you're pairing?" And they'll get a notification, and then they'll decide like, "Yeah, I want to keep my phone unlocked."
It's initiated by the user.
Exactly. It's all driven by the user.
Okay, but it doesn't actually go through any of their account information. Even if they happen to have accounts on both, it's a completely different path.
Yeah. One of the nice things about like Smart Lock for Android is that none of the data ever leaves the device.
Okay. Well, it has to leave one of the devices to get to the other, no?
Well,
I mean,
so
they have to talk to each other.
Yeah, so they talk to each other, but they talk to each other like peer-to-peer as opposed to going through Google.
I see. Okay. Yep. All right, so that's a non account-based thing that you do, but then most of the stuff that you work on is actually account-based stuff, right?
Right. So anytime that you go through Setup Wizard and you're putting an account onto a Google account onto a device, we're there. Like, well, specifically Sandra is there.
Sandra is there on your phone.
Yes.
Okay. Okay. So describe how that works. What's the overall process then? I guess maybe start at Setup Wizard.
Yeah. So when you set up your phone out of the box, you see the sign-in flow that you can create a new account or sign into your existing Google account by entering the email and password. There are other ways that we have for if you have an old phone, then you can also bootstrap your new phone with the account that is on your old phone as well.
Right, to get all the old data. And
so is that when I plug in a cable between both the old phone and the new phone and you transfer everything?
Yeah, you can do cable or it also works with Bluetooth as well. So
right.
It doesn't necessarily need a USB cable.
Does it go faster if I hold the old phone above the new phone so that it flows downhill? We can come back to that. That's the performance side of it.
I said that Chet would ask stupid questions.
So, right. So how does that work then? Wait. That was a feature a couple of releases ago, right?
Yeah.
Where we bootstrap from another device.
So that was originally launched in Lollipop, where done by NFC, where a user would put their old phone and their new phone back to back, and they would sort of trigger the relationship that way.
Yep.
We've since evolved it to also be like whether or not you're in proximity with a Bluetooth device or whether or not you have like this USB connection between devices. So we've been evolving the feature to like sort of make it as simple and as reliable as possible for users to use.
Okay. And how much intervention does that require from the apps themselves? Because sometimes an app will come over and it just seems like a seamless transition from one phone to the other. And sometimes it's like, no, I need to log in. All the data went away.
Yeah, that's one of the challenges that like we're actively like working on is improving that first day experience. If a user is signing in to an app using a Google account, then what will happen is that when a user sort of transfers their account using Smart Setup, like when they're using this sort of device-to-device account authentication flow, they're bootstrapping the device with the accounts that they had on the old device. And then any apps that they had that were signed in using Google Sign In, that should work smoothly. But if you're signing into a new device and you're not using the accounts that you had on a previous device, then that like first day experience is more challenging because we don't necessarily recognize the user's account or the app, or if the app, if you didn't sign into the app using Google Sign In,
yep,
but you use something else, then that's challenging as well.
And I imagine that it's less true these days, but we used to have apps could access things that were device specific, like the IMEI. So if they were using this kind of stuff to key you as a user, like obviously that wouldn't work on the new phone, right?
Exactly. Like if they were like that, or if they were like, if they had sort of the Android key store and they had their own like keys in hardware backed key store, those are the kinds of things we can't transfer. And so the apps may very well start you over because there's just features of the device that are untransferable.
Right.
But yeah, it's challenging. Like we at Google are trying to do a bunch of things to make the like first day experience better. Like, for example, if the user signs in using username and password as opposed to a Google account, we want to make that easier. We have got products like Autofill, like Google Autofill. We'll sign in the user. We'll try to suggest the username and password that the user has used before. If the app is integrated with a thing called Smart Lock for Passwords, the app will actually like see if you've already signed into that app using a username and password. And they'll try to like sort of reuse that sign in to obviate the need to type it in. There's a bunch of like sort of efforts and a bunch of developer outreach that's going on with respect to these products to make sure that first day experience is as smooth as possible.
So, and we also have the account transfer API that the third party developer, they can, if they have an authenticator and then they have their own credentials, they can use this API. When we transfer the account over, we can also transfer the account over as well. So the app would be signed in with the credential instead of user have to go through the manual process again.
Okay, that's exactly what I was going to ask. Like, if I'm an app developer and I want to like a better experience out of the box when the user changes phones, like what should I do? So I should use the accounts API provided by Android and things like account transfer?
The account transfer API is for really transferring the user credential. The account API is for a different purpose.
Okay.
I was just trying to understand. This is even if they have their own login credentials and they're not using the Google authentication stuff, Google logins, right? So there is a way for them to actually make that a better transfer experience then.
That's right.
Yes. Yeah, we do have that. I think if I were an app developer that was on a very tight budget and I didn't have a lot of time to think hard about this stuff, my approach would be to use Google Sign In or use Facebook Sign In. Use some sort of federated identity so that I, as the app developer, don't have to manage a username and password.
Right.
Because like there's a bunch of like security liability that comes with that. And it's just like no one wins when a user has to remember another password.
I mean, it sounds difficult to do right anyway in general to store passwords and usernames and...
Yeah, like you don't want to be that app developer that's not like salting your password store, right? Like that's embarrassing. So I think we're like everybody is better off if you're like reusing just the existing tools of federated sign-in that are available on the internet. And then what will happen is that because the user like from device to device, they're typically preserving their sign-in, then you'll benefit from that. Or if they're from device to device, they're signing into Facebook with the same account, you'll benefit from that as well. You won't need to worry about losing your user every 2 years because they switch devices and suddenly they don't remember their username for your app because your app may not be that like central place in the user's life that like the Play Store or Facebook or any number of other like services provided by like Google. Like those things the user is more likely to remember than your specific app.
Right, especially if it's simple by just clicking on the button.
Like exactly.
They expose that functionality saying, or you can sign in through one of these common providers.
Exactly.
Right, yeah. Which is common on the web as well, right?
Yeah.
So multi-platform.
Yeah.
Users could just use the password 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Sorry, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 7. 1 through 6 is taken already by me.
Yeah, yeah.
So if they want to do that then, so I would assume most smaller developers are doing that anyway, just because, you know, who has the time and wherewithal to create your own login server and infrastructure that would require. So then what do they need to do to opt into that federated system?
Yeah, I mean, like I would just, I would look up like Google sign in. I would look up Firebase, like auth, like Firebase sign in. Like there's a bunch of like sort of prepackaged tools that are already available.
Okay.
And there's APIs that you just like link into your code and you just like sort of wire them in the correct places. I'm not in a position to talk through the code, but.
We don't really do URLs here. Yeah. That's good enough. It's more like what are the systems? So Firebase auth, what I remember when I was trying to do this for some Google APIs in the past was OAuth. Is Firebase auth the evolution of that?
It is. It's OAuth 2. It's like a wrapper on top of a bunch of stuff. So like Google sign in will also provide you like the ability to. What most people really require is just that they have an identifier that they can sort of certify to their backends.
Yeah.
And the OAuth 2 stuff comes in when you actually want to talk to like a Google backend to get data that Google has about the user.
Oh, okay.
So if I were a third party, if I were an app developer and I wanted to access the user's drive, then I would need an OAuth 2 access token. If I were an app developer and I wanted to access the user's what would be another good service? Like historically, it would have been Google Plus or like their social network or something like that.
Or analytics or, anything connected with
it. So if it's connected to the user, then the user needs to consent to that. Then that's where the OAuth 2 stuff comes in.
Okay, but otherwise, it's just a higher level thing saying you have been authenticated through the servers.
Google vouches that this person is this identifier.
Yes.
And it will be the same identifier that we gave last time. And you can, like, on your server-side backend, you can validate that that's the case by checking a signature. And then that's how, like, you unlock that user's data in your own backends.
Right.
And the nice thing about Firebase is that it kind of just packages all of that up quite nicely. And it also makes it so it's easy to scale out. So if in the future you decide, I do want to support username and password, it's just pluggable. It's the same UX, and it's sort of like you just like enable a new flow, and it's there. So it sort of scales up as your needs scale as a developer.
Okay.
I don't mean to sound like a commercial for it, but.
Thanks for listening today. You mentioned autofill in there.
Yeah.
And we've talked to Felipe in the past about how autofill works, but that was, you were saying the framework side of things, right?
Yeah.
So what does your team do then to enable autofill functionality? Like what's the full stack of autofill going on?
Right. So... Felipe, the person who was here before, he works on the framework team. The framework is also the same sort of infrastructure that's used by Dashlane and LastPass and other sort of autofill providers in the Android ecosystem. And Google also provides one of those autofill providers. And that's where my team comes in, is we're the Google implementation of that. And what we do is we sort of share a database of like usernames, passwords, other information with Chrome. And so...
Oh, so if I use the Chrome Password Manager, then the Google autofill for Android will be able to access that information. Okay.
Yeah. Assuming that like the developer of the web page and the developer of the app have affiliated their things together. So there is a layer of security there. But we want to make it so that your username and password are reusable from Android to Chrome and back again. The idea is to ideally make users forget their passwords. Because if a user forgets their password...
I don't think we need to work at that.
Well, like we do want it so that that even if like some nice person comes on their email and says, I need you to like give me $10,000 so I can give you $1 million, that we can say, oh, but you don't know your password. That extra bit of friction prevents you from doing that. So...
Okay, and this also goes through account stuff? So like I am using, let's say I'm on my phone, I'm using Chrome, logged into my account, and therefore, like, is it connecting through the account thing, or is it connecting through, you know, I see you as a user on this phone and you use this app?
Yeah, it's through your account. So your this password store is associated with your Google account.
Okay.
So as long as you have the same Google account that you're signed into Chrome, that is you're signed in with into your Android device.
Yep.
Then we will be sharing those passwords if you have Google autofill enabled.
Okay. Which makes me wonder, so all the things you've mentioned, like give us the laundry list of what are all the things, what are all the facilities that we then manage through the account, right?
Oh, wow.
It's a long list.
I know. Yeah.
If you go to the account settings, we can...
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. We do have like a centralized, like internally we call it universal data controls, but... I don't think, hopefully that's not secret. It's pretty bland.
It's a pretty bland name, yes.
I know. But there are places that you can go where you can sort of see all of the access that you've given to people, all of the devices that you have signed in, as well as sort of a rundown of like the kinds of data that you have, I believe. And the kinds of things that get associated with your account include your name. Like if you have photos, obviously, then all those photos, like the accounts are a way by which you can unlock data in various different products in Google. So like your Gmail, right, your email, like that's not stored with your account, but nobody can sort of get to your emails without your account,
yeah.
Right? That's how we look it up.
Yeah.
And there's a bunch of other stuff too. We associate like your, like in P, we launched end-to-end backup and restore, like being encrypted.
Yep.
And so like those backup sets, that encryption, that's tied to your account.
Okay.
It's not tied to your account credential.
Right.
But,
you know, maybe the more interesting question that I should have asked, we'll delete that whole 5 minutes and say,
can we delete everything you said?
What are the interesting bits in your opinions of account-based stuff that would be appealing to developers to access from their account, from their apps? Right. So one is just the ability to sign in, right? So we covered that.
Yeah.
But that's just signing in to take care of their own.
I mean, just signing, that's a pretty big deal for an application developer.
It is, but we're past that one. But I was thinking more like some of the data, you know, maybe this gets into the OAuth 2 stuff, but like what are the bits that applications would be interested in that they could access then through the accounts given the user's permission? I mean, drive access, you know, if this is where users are storing things that they may want to access. Is this also a dumb question? We should delete this 5 minutes?
I don't know. It's a challenging one because yeah. I almost think that like
maybe they shouldn't.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Well, right. I also imagine it depends on the app. It depends on what we provide, which changes over time. It's not a
like if you were Uber, like location information is useful.
Yep.
If you're Spotify, location information is less useful.
Right.
And I think like it very much depends on what your product is to determine like what data is useful for you. So there's no like what we find is that there's no one type of data that's universally applicable other than the type of data that we typically give out in the ID token. Well, so maybe like a first name is useful.
Yeah.
But then everything else is sort of business case dependent.
And it's also like Android permissions, right? Like as an app, you probably want to request as few as possible. Just to make the user, you know, trust your application more or feel like, they're less exposed to an application they just installed.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Like ideally like in Android or when it comes to OAuth 2 permissions, if we were really, really awesome, we could detect what is sensible for this app to be asking for and then not have to ask the user for permissions because we understand that, the user is downloading a picture editing app. Of course, it's going to need access to pictures. We don't have that yet. So right. In the absence of that, we depend on users to sort of consent as opposed to sort of predicting what the app is going to be doing with the user's data.
Yeah, and the problem with consent is that sometimes it can be hard. I mean, again, same thing with permissions, right? It can be hard as a user to understand why you're asked for a certain permission or certain authorization.
Yeah.
Like I remember, for instance, at first when I was playing, like games on my phone, I noticed that a bunch of them through, I think, Play Games were requesting Google Drive write and read, like not global, but some amount of access. And it took me a while to understand that it's because that way you get cloud saves, right?
Right.
And that's a feature I want as a user. But then when you see that in your dashboard, you're like, wait, why do they need this?
Yeah.
And it can be hard to connect the dots sometimes.
I think there was a classic one that always apps would generally request access to either phone or your contacts. It seems like, you know, the kind of app I was running did not need that information. Why are they asking? And then you assume maliciousness. But I think it was coarse-grained permissions that, they needed that general one because what they actually needed was valid, but it was very small.
I think the IMEI was one of those where you needed like a very broad permission to access to one smaller bit of data, which we discourage, and I think we don't give you access to anymore or something. But
likewise, if like an app wants to get access to like the account's permission, nowadays they're asking for contacts. Like, this is another thing where it seems scarier than necessarily it is, because we don't have the refinement there to...
Okay. So actually, so for the base case where it seems like most apps should at least think about it, of just using the authenticator, right? Or Google login, I forget.
Yeah. Firebase Auth or Google Sign-In.
Right.
Yeah.
What's the permission associated with that? Is that the one that requires contacts, or is there a permission associated with this?
So if you're not actually asking the user, if the user sort of clicks on a button that says sign in with Google, I think it changes every once in a while, but I think there's a very minimal permission to give out what amounts to an ID token, which is basically this app would like to know who you are.
Okay.
But it doesn't grant that app access to any like sort of more data from Google about like your email or your location or anything like that. That's very lightweight. And that's actually the common case.
I just wonder, like, is the user going to see a dialogue saying, you need to give us permission to click this button?
Yeah. No.
Yeah.
So, okay. Yeah, you just click it and it goes.
Yeah, because it's just kind of, I mean, it's opaque to the user. It's not accessing their data in any way. It's just authenticating. Yeah.
There is a little bit of complexity there if you have more than one account. Yep. Because then we have to sort of select what account you would like to identify yourself as. But
actually, so that was one of my problems in some of the migrations I've done. On Android, we tend to migrate devices fairly frequently, right? And when we do that, we migrate multiple accounts at the same time, and not all of that data comes over. And I always wonder why.
Yeah. So if you have like a – some of this is going to get into like – things that are going on now. Historically, we haven't been very good at migrating accounts that are on secondary user profiles.
Okay, so I want to come back to that. Okay,
the kind of account that's on your secondary user profile includes your like work account.
Yeah,
and so if you have like Android Enterprise, right? They provide this like solution where like you can have a model where you can have like your personal information in one profile, your work information in another profile. And this is something that's like available to sort of third parties as part of the enterprise suite. In the past, we haven't been very good at sort of transferring over the secondary user profile for security reasons. And yeah, so admittedly, like there's some data that doesn't get over. Okay. But if you have a bunch of accounts on the first profile, all of those accounts should be transferring, if any of them transfer.
But then there's something else, and that might not be in your area, but also remember in the past, not during my last migration, but you know, when you have multiple Google accounts, there is, I believe, this concept of the primary one.
Yeah, yeah.
And I've had issue in the past where Restore was apparently changing my primary one, and suddenly my in-app purchases go like to my Google.com account instead of my personal account.
Yeah, so that's interesting. Never in the history of Android Auth has there been a notion of a primary account. But there has been a default order to the list of accounts in the account manager that we've always provided. And at one point in time, people sort of started assuming that that default order was meaningful. And so they built apps around it.
I see. That's what... Okay.
So there was a period in time where I think it was me even, like where bugs were introduced because we didn't know that there was this expectation.
Right. You didn't preserve the exact order throughout the whole pipeline.
So if you ever hit that again, please tell me because...
Okay. Yeah, like I said, I didn't...
That should be fixed.
Yeah, when I switched to Pixel 3, it didn't happen. I was relieved because last time it was... Because the only fix was to remove the offending account and start over, and it was a big mess. And it still happens sometimes in weird ways where... Like the keyboard, when you try to type your email address and it offers you like, you know, it uses the email addresses from your accounts as, you know, suggestions. And my primary email that I use all the time is always the third one.
Okay.
That I have to type the most to get to. It's little details like this, but it's interesting. And I think it's probably something related that...
Yeah.
I don't blame you, just to be clear.
So what haven't we asked about?
Well, APIs. So you talked about Firebase, but maybe that's for Sandra. But what are the APIs in the platform that you expose publicly that apps would be using or that they should be aware of, that they should take a look at to see if they're useful?
For the platform, is generally account managers APIs. So you can get account now require that you those account visible to your app. And then I think the most used API is probably get token. It's related to the OAuth 2 token that we have been talking about. There you specify the scope, which is the data that you want to access, like for example, photo, calendar, that's where you use it. And then it's all handled by us that for showing the consent dialog of what this app is asking for. And I think that is the most used API.
So the accounts is interesting because when I sign in some apps, let's say in the Flickr application where I have my photos, it creates an account. Like if I go to the system settings, I go to accounts, I see my Google accounts, and then I see a Yahoo or whatever, wherever Flickr is these days, keeps changing. But in some apps, when I sign in, like it doesn't add an account, you know, at the system level. So when should an app create this kind of account? Like what's the benefit? What are the benefits? Because I have no idea personally. Like as far as I can tell, it's random when an app creates an account or not.
I believe it is a good way to use the account manager authenticator. The authentication part or authorization part is an important piece of your app. And I do notice that not every app have user sign-in are using this. Yeah. But like
if they do, will that help during device migration, for instance?
Yes. Okay. So like the account transfer API that I mentioned, it starts with this authenticator. So they have to implement this authenticator.
I see. Okay.
In the using the account managers. And then on top of it, they can implement the encryption, etc. using the account transfer API. So when we do the transfer, we will see what authenticators are available and then do this to transfer all the accounts.
Okay, so please, app developers, for my sake, my personal sake, use this API.
So have you noticed when migrating devices that that specific account, which like it, are you saying it authenticated Flickr, authenticated through Google, but then went ahead and created their own account anyway? Is that what was going on?
No, no. Flickr creates its own account in the system settings, and I believe that is restored properly. And that's the kind of apps where you don't have to re-log in. And then there's apps where you have to re-log in because you know I assume they just use like app preferences, and those are restored the same way.
And personally, I like it when I go to settings and then I can see actually all my accounts or do something about it. And if you have like sync adapter, like this is another thing you can implement. If you have an account and you want to sync like periodically or some event, then you implement the sync adapter, you can see it there and then also see the state of each sync, whether there is any problem, when was the last sync, etc.
Yeah, that's a good point. It also gives users some control about what's going on and how they want to use background sync.
All right.
So, and the Firebase Auth, is that a generic API that works for any kind of federated signing, or is that for the Google solution, or...?
It includes, Sandra might be even more qualified to answer this. She worked on it.
Yeah, I worked on it a couple of years ago, actually. It implemented different IDP, like the identity provider. So Facebook, Google is what we have mentioned. And then the app developer can specify any other way that is supported, like username and password. So to the app developer, it's transparent. It's totally transparent. Specify this option that you want your app want to support, and then user will see these options, and then they can choose which way to log.
So when I launch an app, like you know, it's fairly common to see a login password field, and underneath they are sign in with Google and sign in with Facebook. So for an app developer who does this kind of screen, they effectively talk to a single API. That's okay.
I assume that Firebase Auth. That was a good question.
I assume that it
mapped directly to Google's authenticator, because Firebase is a Google thing. But it's a wrapper on top of functionality, and then the app developer tells it what to target?
Yep. Okay. And obviously, like Google is one of the options. When we implemented it, we implemented the Google part too, but it is not the only option.
So I can give an example. For example,
please.
If your app requires certain, because for some of Facebook or Google, it has this OAuth scope, or like for some of you log into Facebook, sometimes you see like this app is requesting to access some of the information of your profile, like your email, maybe your name, that kind of information. So it would be so when the app implemented this, they can choose what scope they require. additional information that they can pass into. So it can be a little bit different. That can be app specific.
Okay.
Because if you have a picture app, then you probably want to have that access to the pictures, or like if you are doing something that maybe playing games with friends, and then you may want to access like the circle of your friends, etc.
Okay. So I'm still trying to understand how it works. So let's say, for example, there's a fictional authenticator service from a fictional company called Facebook.
Yeah.
And they're going to use the Firebase Auth stuff to actually authenticate through that. Do they also, is there an API from this fictional Facebook company that they then, like, is there a library they download and link in to use that stuff? Or does Firebase, like, is it a wrapper on top of all this stuff and it magically knows how to contact
these? Yeah, we don't, at least at the time that we were involved with it,
yeah.
And I'm pretty sure it's still today. We don't redistribute the Facebook SDK. So the developer who's incorporating these, and if they're like, this is a part of my flow,
yep.
They would be responsible for like going and grabbing the Facebook SDK. But our libraries, at least at the time that we were doing this stuff, was linking against those symbols.
Yeah. Okay.
So it was like incorporating an API that included that plus, you know, other things as well.
Yeah.
So the value add of the sort of Firebase stuff isn't necessarily, oh, I can then use Google sign in, or I can then use Facebook sign in. The value add is that it provides like a nice, clean way to sort of incorporate a number of different sort of methods of signing into an app.
Yeah. So it's similar to what we're doing in Jetpack with Work Manager, where you have a unified API, but there's different backends.
Yeah, although it sounds like the developer is still going to get involved, like then they're going to redirect some of the information flow to then, you know, pipe it into the Facebook API that they're using.
Right. Well, that piping is done by our intermediating API.
But all they have to do is bring the library in the app.
Exactly.
They just have to compile it in the app. Like,
exactly. We just need the symbols.
Yeah. Okay. And then if they are using some custom homebrew authentication system instead of the Facebook one, is there also a flow where you call Firebase and then it can redirect with information, or maybe that's just a silly flow?
I don't know.
Okay,
know.
So it's a wrapper on top of certain hard-coded services.
Right.
The sign-in part is transparent, but if I remember back in there, you can get the Facebook token if you want to do something like, to your question, if I want to call some specific Facebook API, which require me to pass in a Facebook token, that you can get it from the Firebase library.
Yeah, okay.
So, and for app developers who are new to this kind of authentication stuff, like Chet and I, for instance.
Yeah.
How did you know?
Gee, I wonder why. Are there some best practices that you recommend? Are there like mistakes you've seen people do that they should avoid? Like anything specific? I mean, it sounds like you're making it pretty easy.
Right.
But it also sounds like something you really, really don't want to mess up in your app. I'm wondering if there are things that are easy to get wrong if you don't know what you're doing.
One top number one problem that we have seen is an app try to get a token and then they assume it's always available, but there are situations that like specific to the Google account, for example, if the account requires some additional information in a state, for example, maybe you have changed your password on the back end, or you have done something, revoked the asset. That is all the things that you can do from the back end. And then an app, this is like all opaque to the app, right? The app tried to get a token, it would fail because the token available on the device is not valid anymore. And the app should handle this situation.
Yep.
And they can choose to listen to the broadcast or the accounts they listen to now, that you can get the state change, whether the account is in good state or in bad state before. When you call get token, it fell. And then you should not just like blindly retry. Maybe try to back off or listen to this like state change to know that the account is now back in a good state before you retry. Because otherwise you just like keep trying and keep failing.
The related complexity that I remember when I was playing around with the OAuth or OAuth 2 stuff a couple of years ago was the inherent asynchronousness of things, where you're contacting a service on the back end, but you may be in a flow in your application where you kind of needed that information now. And it just sort of added to the complexity of like, what do I do now?
That's just because you were not writing your app properly, Chet.
Maybe.
You're
just
bad at
maybe.
This.
But I don't know if there's like a general approach there too, where it's like, yeah, you're going to call a service. What happens if there's actually no service for the phone at that point, you know, or server can't be contacted or whatever?
Yeah, I think that's true of almost everything that depends on the internet. Is like when you have an Android app, what happens when the user is driving through a tunnel and you're still trying to use the app?
Yep.
You have to have a way like to fall back to be like, oh, we were unable to get the data. Maybe it's for a transient reason. Maybe it's for a permanent reason. Our APIs are fairly good at sort of informing the app whether or not it's something that's transient or whether it's something the user needs to intervene in. And that's true across the board on our APIs. But I do think it is a design challenge to be able to like sort of like figure out how to keep the user engaged even while you're doing work in the back end over networks that may very well be very slow, especially if you're working in markets that aren't like North America. So that is just a challenge in Android, is writing asynchronous apps.
And with regard to the error that I just mentioned, like if for some of the app, they do want this to happen now.
Yeah.
And we do return the resolution that user, it's because this is mostly error can be resolved by user. Like for example, if they change password or they revoke the asset, they just need to re-authenticate themselves. So if they can either start the intent, which user can do something to re-authenticate themselves, and then they try to get a token after user finish that action, then it would work.
Okay. I can think of a best practice. I haven't seen it in a while now, but I remember apps. It wasn't with Google Authentication. It was with other types of accounts. But you know, you're in an app. You're trying to log in. They invoke a web view of some kind, so you can enter username and password. And I use a password manager, and that was before autofill. So you know, you would switch to your password manager, go grab the password, go back to the app. But the fact that you moved away from the app, they basically canceled the signing flow. And now you can't enter your password anymore. So you start again, and by then, like your password manager has cleared your clipboard, or and you can just never enter the password.
Or when you copy it into the clipboard, it's now visible to everybody.
Oh, it's visible to everybody. Yeah.
Yeah. My one suggestion to everybody, and this is maybe it's the bar is too low, is just don't log passwords in Logcat.
Oh yes, please.
Use HTTPS. Right. Don't send passwords in the clear. Don't attach your passwords to get parameters in your URLs. Like, be nice to users. Remember that the user's probably reusing the password that they gave to you everywhere else. So it helps you and it helps everybody else if...
I do remember working on bug reports that were filed publicly, you know, issue tracker, and you start looking at Logcat to, you know, get an idea of what's going on. And then you see logs from apps that have nothing to do with the bug, and you see what's being logged, and... it can be pretty shocking.
Yeah. Even before I'm worried about like, oh, is my app asynchronous or not?
Just
don't give away user passwords, please.
Best practice. Don't give away personal information.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, and they had no idea that happened either. Yeah.
Yeah.
Unfortunate. All right. What did we forget? Anything? Did we cover it all? Everything you've done?
I think so. Hopefully this went
for all time. Okay. Cool. Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot.